Hello again, Mike O'Connor, another Geezer Cast. Just came back from a great weekend at Northland College with Richard. Got to hang out with him and Kevin and Dan on the radio station up there. And I think on reflection after leaving that what Richard really wanted me to do was tell old radio stories, and I completely dropped the ball. So I thought I would tell old radio stories on this Geezer Cast. And if he wanted to, he can play this on WRNC sometime and get those old radio stories out there. So I thought of a few good ones. Most of my radio stuff was either working on the National Federation of Community Broadcasters, which was started by me and a gaggle of others in the mid-70s to sort of promote the cause of community radio nationally, or on WORT, which is a station in Madison, Wisconsin, that's still going strong. I was sort of the founder of that station, and so I got to do a lot of interesting stuff, because sometimes you look around the room and nobody else wants to do stuff, and you go, well, I guess that leaves me. So one of those things was that we got a station from an old guy named Earl Fessler, who had a station that he basically sold, and when the people bought the station, they didn't really want the stuff. They didn't want the transmitter or the tower. And so he had this empty studio and an old transmitter and an old tower with an antenna on it, sort of left over, and we wound up renting that for the first iteration of WORT. One of the problems was that somebody had to climb up the tower and take down the old antenna, and then we had to modify the antenna and put it back up. This is one of those towers that's was about 185 or maybe 200 feet tall. It was basically just a fishing pole. It was stuck up in the sky. It was self-supporting. And the problem with it was that when you got up near the top, it started to flip back and forth, just like a fishing pole, which was a little disconcerting. Pat Ryan was the chief engineer, and Pat was going to go up, and he got about halfway up the tower, and that was it. He froze to the tower, and we sort of had to talk him back down. So then we got this guy who said, sure, I'm a mountain climber. I can do that stuff, and he got himself all clipped onto the tower. He had all this cool equipment like carabiners and stuff like that. And then right as he was going to get gone, he said, so you've got insurance, right? And we said, no, we don't have any insurance. We're poor. We don't have anything like that. He said, oh, well, I can't go up there without insurance. If I fell off, I'd be in trouble. So he left. He said, well, you can borrow my stuff. And so that kind of left me. And so Jeff Lang and I went up on a day. We didn't tell anybody we were going to do this because we didn't want anybody watching. And Jeff stood at the bottom, and I climbed up the tower. And my goal was to get all the way to the top of the tower and clip a carabiner on there, because then from there on I could, you know, if I fell, I could at least fall against a rope through a carabiner. And so I made it, and I got back down to the bottom, and then Jeff and I just sat there and cried in each other's arms because we were both so scared, because it was really scary that first time. But that started my tower climbing career, and I wound up, you know, doing a lot of it, making some money at it, helped pay for grad school and stuff like that. That first one was really scary. Before we moved into that place, we were going to go on the YWCA building in downtown Madison, right in the center of town, and we didn't at that time have a transmitter, and friends of mine and I who worked at WHA were talking around, and one of the chief engineers said, you know, there's a transmitter that's sitting, oh, I think it was in Colfax, because the Wisconsin Public Radio Network has a whole lot of stations, and they were and probably are always constantly replacing equipment. And the engineer said, you know, if you guys can haul that transmitter out of there, you can have it, because it's junk, and it's going to be a pain to get out of there. And so a bunch of us jumped in my beat-up old Ford van and drove up to Colfax. And the interesting thing about that experience was that we turned off all the breakers, and Mark Stelting, who was another one of the engineers that helped with Wart, was cutting the cables, you know, all the power cables and stuff like that. And he cut a 440-volt feeder cable that we hadn't turned the breaker off on because it was in a different breaker box. And there was this like blinding flash of light. And you know those great big bolt cutters? Well, that's what he was using to cut these wires. And the bolt cutters, the whole tips were completely melted down. And Mark sort of staggered out, sat on the ground outside and twitched for a little while. He was okay, but he wasn't real excited about going back in there and cutting cables for a while. We did manage to get the 440-volt power turned off. So it's a little easier going after that. And that transmitter, since we didn't need it, since we found Earl's place instead, we gave that to the station that was just getting started in Cincinnati, that was WAIF, which was owned by Stepchild Broadcasting. And so they got a truck, and they came and they picked up this transmitter, this spare transmitter that we didn't need anymore. And they hauled it off to Cincinnati. And for some reason, I was in Cincinnati when they had another transmitter site on the top of a tall building. And in order to get the transmitter up there, they'd rented a crane to, you know, hoist it up, and then they were going to just drop it on the roof and sort of manhandle it the rest of the way into the transmitter shack. And the only problem was that the crane turned out to be about 2 inches too short. And so when they hoisted it all the way up, the transmitter was about 2 inches lower than it needed to be in order to get over this low wall that was around the top of the building. And so there was this moment where we were up on top of the building, we put a rope around the transmitter, and we swung it back and forth so that it was swinging higher than 2 inches, and then the guy that was running the crane, when it was just about ready to go, it was like he was just running a fishing rod. He just pushed that crane a little bit over, and the transmitter sort of crashed over the top of the wall, broke a little bit of stuff on the way, and you know, we were all sitting on top of this 13 or 14-story building, hanging out, pulling on ropes and stuff. Safety equipment was not one of our strong suits, but we got the thing in, and I know it went for quite a while. I don't know if I imagine by now it's been replaced, but it was WAIF's transmitter for a long time. Now, back at WORT, one of the problems that we had with WORT is that we were scrounging all the equipment. We put the whole station on the air for under, I think it was under $10,000. And so we got a lot of donated equipment. And the night that we went on the air, it turned out that most of that equipment broke. And so immortalized in some, I think in Richard Mahler's tape collection, is me introducing a record and the turntable broke, and then introducing a tape and then the tape player broke, and then introducing a cartridge tape and then the cart machine broke. And thus having to ad lib for a little while I think again Pat Ryan fixed the equipment. And the station managed to stay on the air for about a week, and then the main power transformer in that ancient transmitter in the back blew up, and we wound up being off the air for a couple of weeks while we got a replacement transformer for it. Not the best start. The equipment got better as time went on, but at the beginning it was pretty skimpy on the money front because we didn't have any money at all. Bonnie Raitt did two benefits for us. That's what raised the bulk of the $10,000. We did a lot of spaghetti dinners and movies and stuff like that, but Bonnie Raitt did two concerts for us, and that was the big fundraiser for us. Now, one of the things that happened is that a lot of sort of local political types showed up at the station. And one time, Senator Proxmire showed up, and I got to interview him, and I offered him a cup of coffee before we started, and he accepted. He thought that was a good idea, and so I went and made coffee the way we always did at WORT, which is that I ran the hot water in the sink until it was as hot as it was going to get, and then I put that hot water in a mug, and I put a little instant coffee in there, and that was coffee. And I took that in to Senator Proxmire just before we were starting the interview, and he took a sip and he grimaced and put the coffee cup down and said on the air, "You know, that is the worst coffee I have ever had in my whole life. How did you make it?" And I described that. And we got three coffee makers, I think, donated to the station the next day. It's a big breakthrough for us because we couldn't afford a coffee maker. So WRT holds the landmark position of being the only station to almost kill off a senator with our coffee. A sitting senator, no less. That was pretty cool. And then I thought the final story I'd tell you is the story not about WRT, but Lorenzo Milam and Jeremy Landsman are really the people that were my mentors and guides. They inspired a lot of us geeks to start community radio stations. And one of the stations that they started was KRAB in Seattle, Washington. And they invented the pledge wrap, because they were going along pretty good and they ran out of money and they realized that they didn't have any money, and so they decided, well, God, you know, what can we do? And they decided that they could just play all their best programs, and in between each tape they would just plead with people to send money. And when people would call up the station, they'd write down their name and address, and then they'd send somebody over to collect the money. Now, this has turned into this horrible thing that happens on all public stations now for weeks and weeks every year, and it's part of the budget. But back then, it was just an emergency measure to get us through the worst of the worst times. And one of the things that's hard for public radio stations is accounts receivable, collecting the money after it's been pledged. But Lorenzo told the story of how they did this at KRAB, and they had 100% collections. They got every dime that people pledged. And the reason is because Lorenzo recruited the Hells Angels to be the collections people. So if you donated a little money to KRAB, he'd call up and say, "Oh, I'll give you $20. And about 20 minutes later, a Hells Angel would show up at your front door and ask very politely for the $20 that you just pledged to the station. Everybody paid. Nobody wants to mess with a Hell's Angel when it comes to accounts receivable. So anyway, those are a few little stories. There's tons and tons of radio tales, and I think that's what Richard really wanted me to do when I was on the radio last week, or this week. I realized that I sort of flunked on that, so there's some radio tales for Richard and for the unborn grandchildren as well. Hope you enjoyed this one. I'll see you the next time.